Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to the Flute View Radio. This is Viviana Guzman for theflutview.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Flute View Radio podcast. Today's episode will feature our special guest, Sarah Jackson, the piccolo player from the Los Angeles Philharmonic. I am here today, here in beautiful, sunny Seattle, Washington, and I'd like to bring on my co-host this morning, afternoon in New York. Welcome, Barbara Cecil. Can you hear me? Hello, welcome.
Yes, I can. Oh, hello. Hello, Viviana.
Seattle is beautiful. I'm about to go on tour. I'm going to Hawaii. That'll be even more warm and luscious.
Sounds lovely. What will you be doing in beautiful Hawaii?
I'm boarding a cruise ship, and I'm playing as a guest entertainer for a Holland America ship.
Wow.
That is wonderful. Traveling to Hawaii. So, yeah. What are you up to?
Oh, let's see. I'm still kind of buried around our startup. I'm still working really hard on that and getting ready also to play flute at my synagogue for the Jewish New Year.
Aha.
So
very nice.
I always go and do that as my donation to our community. It's fun.
Very good. Very good.
Yeah.
Very, very awesome. Well, before we bring on our guest, I would like to do our raffle. This week, the raffle is sponsored by Miyazawa Flutes, and they have generously donated a little gift pack that will be going to one of our subscribers. Now, you have to be a current subscriber to be eligible for this, so I'm going to turn on my random sequence generator, and using all the emails of our current subscribers, let me see here, 1, 2, 3, and the winner is Kelly Wilson. Congratulations, Kelly. This is the Kelly of kelly@wilsonflute.com. You will be receiving a gift package from Miyazawa that includes some pencils, also a cleaning cloth from Miyazawa. So congratulations, Kelly. I will be contacting you later today. Now, in order to be a subscriber for the Flute View magazine, a one-year subscription, it goes for just $12.95. And so log on to theflutview.com and become a subscriber today. Our guest today is Sarah Jackson. I have known Sarah for a couple years now. She's an awesome, beautiful person and player. She has held the position of piccolo with the Los Angeles Philharmonic since 2003. 10 years prior to joining the LA Phil in 1993, she joined the Vancouver Symphony Orchestra in British Columbia, Canada. She moved on to assume the position of assistant principal flute and piccolo with that orchestra. Jackson also taught flute and piccolo at the University of British Columbia. Sarah is a much sought-after piccolo and flute teacher, attracting students from all over the world. She's also an active chamber musician, soloist, clinician, and freelance artist, and has played for numerous films and audio recordings and TV and radio broadcasts. In addition to orchestral performance and teaching, Sarah has frequently been engaged as a soloist and clinician on both the flute and piccolo in Belgium, the Netherlands, Japan, Czech Republic, Canada, and the U.S. So let's bring on Sarah Jackson. You are live on air. Welcome, Sarah. How are you?
Thank you. I am very well. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure and honor to have you. I'm looking forward to this.
Me too.
Learning a little more about what you are up to. Can you give us a couple things that you are working on right now?
Well, we've just started. The LA Phil has just started their winter season. We are in our first week. So during the summer, we are entirely at the Hollywood Bowl. So it's a 52-week season. So, you know, obviously we have vacation time. But we just simply move from the Hollywood Bowl to Walt Disney Concert Hall. We get a week off, and here we are now at Walt Disney Concert Hall. Yeah, I had a gala concert on Tuesday, and then our first main series concert was yesterday.
Great.
So another one tonight.
What music was on your gala concert?
The gala concert was a Gershwin extravaganza. So yeah, that was fun. We had two singers, and we had a pianist from Colburn School, which is right across the street from Walt Disney
College. Oh, that's great. Right.
Nice to give a student an opportunity.
Oh, how wonderful.
So that's really fun. And the main series concert, it's sort of a Beethoven extravaganza. And it starts with Coriolan Overture. Then we're doing a piece by John Adams. Oh, what a lovely, lovely man and a terrific composer. So his piece is called Absolute Jest.
And this is a newer piece.
It quotes Beethoven, and it actually starts bum ba-dum, bum ba-dum, bum ba-dum. It's very funny. And that's with a string quartet is the soloist. And then, so it's really fun. It's a great concert.
And it's all relating back to Beethoven, which I think is great.
Beethoven was on the second half as well, yeah.
And was...
With Yefim Bronfman, actually. I shouldn't forget to mention that. I mean, Yefim Bronfman is playing a piano concerto.
Oh, wow.
Fima, no slouch there. How could I forget to mention him?
And you had the Dudamel was conducting your opening concert. Oh, how great!
Absolutely, the first week.
Right.
Yeah, yeah,
right.
And later in November, it's interesting. We're going to be going on tour. We normally have international tours. Unfortunately, something happened with our Australian tour, which was supposed to be this year.
Yeah.
And so they quickly put something together, and we're just heading up the West Coast. But that's going to be lovely to go to San Francisco, Davis, and Seattle. Yes, in November.
November, awesome.
That's great. That's great. You can visit with all your friends as you head up the coast.
I will definitely, if I'm around, I will definitely love to see you and hear the orchestra. So... Hit me
that
up
would be
when
great.
You're in San Francisco. Yeah, well, I'll take you out.
I certainly will.
Excellent. So the Flute View November edition is going to be Piccolo Power, and we are interviewing you're kind of the kickoff for that edition. And one of the questions that I've been asking all the piccolo players is why and how you chose the piccolo instead of the flute. Can you tell us a little about your journey, about how you ended up doing that?
Well, my journey into flute playing is actually a little more interesting, but my journey into piccolo playing, like a lot of students, I wasn't that interested in playing the piccolo when I was going to school. In fact, I didn't even own a piccolo until graduate school. I borrowed piccolos and whatnot. And then I decided, you know, this is something, I bought an instrument and I really wanted to learn how to play the piccolo. And of course, what happens is you get better at the instrument and so you like it more. You know, you play alto flute, for instance, and let's say you're not a good alto flute player when you first pick it up. It's not very offensive if you play badly.
That's right.
You pick up the piccolo, and if you're not good at it, it can be pretty offensive. So I think it shocks a lot of people into not wanting to play it more. So
and that was hard.
So when I, it's hard. It's very hard.
It's hard.
But you know, it's so unfortunate. I always say this to students. I have a lot of people who come to me and they're accomplished flute players, and they say, "This is my first piccolo lesson ever. Can you believe it?" And I say, yeah, that's the majority I get are accomplished flute players who say, you know, I really need to tackle this beast. So, you know, you have to give yourself the chance to learn it. My adage is always, sorry, I've gotten a little off topic with your question, but my adage is,
No.
If somebody handed you a trumpet, would you know how to play it? You'd say, of course not. I have to learn how to play the trumpet. Could you play the trumpet? Well, I'm sure you could, but you would have to learn how to play it. So here you are, an accomplished flute player to some degree, and somebody hands you a piccolo and says, play it. Why are you supposed to be a good piccolo player? That's seriously, that's really unfair to ourselves. You need to give yourself the opportunity to say, I need to learn how to play the piccolo. Just because I can play the flute does not mean I can play the piccolo. So that's the tact that I took. And I said, okay, I don't know how to play this instrument. I'm lucky. Most of the fingerings are the same. The concept is the same. You know, we're not buzzing our lips like changing to trumpet or something. You know, we're blowing across. But that's about where it is. The pitch tendencies are different. The resistance level is different. Mm-hmm. So many things are different with the piccolo. So you have to give yourself the opportunity to learn. So I worked very hard on it. And I won... as I was doing graduate studies in Montreal, I won second flute in the Vancouver Symphony. And in an orchestra, in second flute, you have to be able to play some piccolo. And so I'd already been working at it, and I was okay on the piccolo, but I wasn't great. But, you know, I could play, you know, the 8 bars to Dvorak and, you know, things like that in symphonies and whatnot. And I realized I really needed to step up, you know, my act. And I put a lot of effort into piccolo, and I absolutely fell in love with the instrument. I didn't think I would. I was doing it for more self-preservation, like, okay, I have to be more than okay on this instrument. This is not acceptable in my book. I want to keep my job. It was good enough for the job, but it wasn't good enough for me. I didn't like the level that I was playing at. And so I just said, you know, I really need to figure out how to play this instrument. And I figured out exercises that work better on piccolo than work on flute, and technical exercises, just because you can play a scale evenly on flute, you pick up the piccolo, and the weight of the keys are different. Your fingers are closer together. Your fingers are closer to the instrument. So I worked on technique of the piccolo and realized, you know what, that really does help to not say, gee, I can technically play the flute, therefore I can technically play the piccolo. And I realized there were enough differences that it just makes that difference in being okay or good and being great is spending the time on the instrument to figure it out, just like you did figuring out the flute.
The flute. And have you written a method book to help the rest of the aspiring piccolo players out there?
Oh, everybody asks me that. No, I have not. When people come for lessons, you know, I always hand them my warm up and we work on the warm up and whatnot. But no, I have not written a method book. No. Okay.
That would be so interesting, right? Because you have such an incredibly clear point of view and method that I don't think I've heard anyone discuss in that way ever before. And you know, it just would be so inspiring. Like, I might start practicing piccolo again.
Right. But whatever you do, if you start practicing piccolo, whatever method book you use, be kind to yourself. Don't expect that you can do it. Say,
you know,
I want to learn.
I've played it for a long time, and it did get better. It got okay. And then I stopped. I said, I don't need this right now, which is sad. No, it's sad.
It is, because it's so beautiful. I think sort of my quest in life on the piccolo is to say this is a beautiful musical instrument. It's mm-hmm. more than stars and stripes and the little yippy pippy things that can be played. Although those are fun too, but you know, it really is a solo instrument unto itself. It's not a secondary instrument.
No, yeah. And I agree. And I have. Okay, you want to ask a question? I have this one pet question, but you go, Viviana.
Well, I was just going to say, Sarah, I will never forget how beautiful your Vivaldi second movement when I heard you in Canada at the Canadian Flute Convention. That was so beautiful. So that exactly says what you're saying. It just brought the piccolo to this other level of absolute sheer beauty. Really beautiful.
It really is a gorgeous instrument, and it's just a matter of putting the time in learning it.
Right. So I have a question about piccolo in the orchestra.
Yes.
And I always think about this, you know, when the piccolo plays, especially in the really big pieces, and that's about how much the piccolo can really drive the orchestra and the rhythm of the orchestra. And I just was hoping that you could share, you know, your thoughts on that with our listeners.
Well,
if you disagree with me, that's okay too.
No, sorry, my cat keeps meowing.
I love your cat.
My cat, she keeps coming up and meowing.
I know, I've been
that.
Hearing him, and I've been meaning to say something, yeah.
Well, I'm talking, so clearly I'm talking to her.
Right, that's it.
Yeah. So I feel the piccolo can be absolutely the engine that drives the orchestra. You can control absolutely everything. You can't see me, but I have a little impish grin on my face. You can control the entire orchestra. You can bury the orchestra if you want.
Yes.
The key is balance and discretion. But you can absolutely drive things. Like, for instance, in Daphnis, there's one section that gets faster and faster and faster, and it just drives.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, I drive that accelerando. Like,
yeah.
You know, nobody's business. We're doing it as fast as I want to do it.
Right.
Right. Exactly.
Right.
You're the Ferrari driver there.
I'm the Ferrari driver there, and I can play that pretty fast and articulate it pretty fast. So we take it pretty fast. But you always have to let the conductor think that they're in charge.
Right. Just a little bit. Just a little bit.
And I say that because my husband's a conductor.
What's your favorite piccolo part in an orchestra?
I think it's probably Scheherazade. I absolutely love Scheherazade. And I think it has its moments of blending with other instruments. It has its solo on top of the orchestra moments.
Mm-hmm.
And it has its within the orchestra moment. And I think that also we need to think about the piccolo and how it can fit in the orchestra, because it's not always about the on top of the orchestra moment. I mean, those are fun. You know, that's like playing a really fast, trashy piece. Great.
Right.
It's fun. But it's just one, it's just on, it's drive. And there are so many other hats, if you will. And I learned this idea that the hats that you wear. And I learned this playing second flute in my first job. And by the way, I love playing second flute. I think it's so creative. People say, oh, no, it's second flute. You're not first. But it's far more creative. And
it's
so
fun.
In second flute, it's fun. You have to
learn
how to blend with someone else. You have to learn how to match somebody else. You have to learn when it's your time to come out and be solo and when it's your time to be just fitting in, maybe unison or whatever the situation. And that can be within one phrase.
Right.
You
right.
Know,
how to make the first flute sound good.
Yeah, that too. And so in Mendelssohn's Italian Symphony, the second movement, this winding and dovetailing of second flute and first flute is it's just so masterful and can be so creative. So that's where I really learned, when is it your time to shine in one way, and when is it your time to shine in another? Playing a perfect unison with somebody is shining in your ability, in your the perfection, the execution of being able to play so you only hear one person. So that relates to piccolo a lot. We have a lot more solo moments, I think, than second flute. No, I don't think, I know, than second flute. Mm-hmm. But not every moment you're playing is that shining moment in terms of being brilliant on top of the orchestra. There are other times where, for instance, a lot of Tchaikovsky, not the solos, not the brilliant piccolo solos, but the tutti sections for piccolo, mm-hmm. all you are is extending the flute range. So,
right.
for instance, the flute goes up and the strings keep going. The flute can't keep going and drops down, and then the piccolo carries over.
Right.
So you need to make it sound like one seamless big flute following the string line. It's all about the strings, and we're coloring the strings in Tchaikovsky. So you mm-hmm. are only at it. You're only extending the flute register. So you need to have a much fatter sound. You need to have a sound that sounds like a flute, a very rich and a very pure sound that sounds like a flute. Some of the Tchaikovsky solos, for instance, you can be very bright and very brilliant on those.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. it's just a matter of knowing what your role is, and I find that fascinating. I find orchestral playing so fascinating for that reason. And then you have the personalities of playing with everybody and their own styles, and that's another fascination.
Sarah, did you have a specific piccolo teacher, or how did you, was your guidance? Who was your mentor? Who were your mentors?
I didn't have a piccolo lesson. No, that's not true. I had one piccolo lesson from someone, and I hated it, and they weren't teaching anything that made any sense to me. So, and then I just, there was nobody, and I'm not going to mention this person's name, but it was just, it was pretty useless. So,
So you're your own piccolo voice.
I'm my own piccolo voice. And for that reason, I put a lot of time into thinking, what makes this better? Making up exercises, mm-hmm. what helps this situation, what helps that situation. And of course, I started with flute exercises and things, and I really analyzed them and said, now, what about this exercise is working on piccolo, and what about it is not working, and why, so that I can then create an exercise that does work.
Mm-hmm.
So, I pull out a lot of ideas when I teach. Well, try this idea and try that idea and try that idea. And I find a lot of the things, especially for tone and sound and that kind of a thing, just don't work on piccolo that works, for, works for flute.
Okay.
Yeah.
That is
the technique
very interesting.
Exercise. Yeah, because there are different resistance levels and there are different things you need to think about when you're playing piccolo.
Right, in your body,
so,
in your mouth, in your... Right,
in your body, in your mouth, yeah, right, uh-huh. exactly. So I find specifically tone exercises that work for flute really mm-hmm. don't do a lot of good for piccolo. Technique, on the other hand, well, that is exactly the same. So, when I work on technique with piccolo students or my own technique, I just pull out technique books and mm-hmm. just, work on them that way. Obviously, you need to find there's some books that go up that are really great. I actually like Jeffrey Gilbert's Technical Flexibility for Flutists. It's not a very common book, but it's a really great
book.
One. And
very interesting.
And I really love the chromatic interval exercises in the back. But of course, it starts on a C, so you just start on a D, and then up at the top, I've put little sticky notes over where it goes too high, so the turnaround is perfect up at a high C. He goes up to a high D. I go up to a high C. A lot of people stop piccolo on a B, but we can play a C. So technique exercises should go up to a high C on piccolo. So, but we don't go up to C-sharp.
Yeah, my
D.
My teacher Albert Tipton was very fond of Jeffrey Gilbert, but he's not. He's very well known in Europe, I would say, but in the U.S. he didn't sort of cross over as much.
No, he didn't.
And I guess
he didn't.
Because of your Canadian training, maybe that's why you got him or his influence.
Yeah, actually, it was Peter Lloyd that introduced me to Jeffrey Gilbert.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I got introduced to his works. And I just Jeffrey Gilbert assigned. I did a summer workshop, and so we did the Sequences book by Jeffrey Gilbert. And I then just bought up everything I could find from Jeffrey Gilbert, and I really liked this technical flexibility for flutists. I think a lot of the beginning of the book is a little redundant. So when people start flipping through, they say, what do I need to have the scales in fours for, and then in fives, and then in sixes, and then in sevens? You know, I mean, it is a little bit redundant. But there are some gems of exercises in the back.
How many piccolos do you own, Sarah?
I own three. I don't like to collect instruments. I know three sounds extravagant, but I have a main instrument and a backup instrument. And
so what are
then
you
I've got
playing
one.
As your main instrument?
Keith, all the way. Jim Keith, K-E-E-F-E, for those of you who don't know Keith Piccolos.
Wow.
So a lot of people don't know the name of Keith. They are the best instruments. I mean, they are hands down. I don't get sponsored by them. I don't get money from them. They're just, this is the instrument I play, and I think they are absolutely phenomenal. Jan Kinmont does the key work, and it's amazing. Her padding and her key work is phenomenal. And Jim Keith does the wood and the head joint. So the two of them used to work for Brannan. So the old Brannan piccolos are essentially Keith piccolos now. Jim and Jan launched out on their own, and what used to be Brannan piccolos are now called Keith piccolos. But there's so much more now because they have a lot of flexibility, and they are doing things that are extending the instrument unbelievably. Just little tweaks that make the instrument sound better. Little shapes and cuts. And for instance, they had three cuts of head joint. They had modern, traditional, and classic. And they found that a lot of people were liking some things of the some things of the traditional and some things of the classical. So what did they do? They came out with a traditional classic cut. Now they have four styles. You know, they're independent. They can do that, and that's really wonderful. So now they have four styles of head joints, and different woods, and they are putting gold, not gold keys. I mean, you can get gold keys if you want. But it's that they're using gold in the sleeves and gold in all the fittings. And then there are the major advancements that they're doing. For instance, they have a C-sharp trill key for piccolo. It's not the same as just slapping a C-sharp trill key on like you would do on flute, or everybody would have done it by now, because the flute's a cylindrical bore and the piccolo's a reverse conical bore.
Got it.
So you can't just put a C-sharp trill key on it, like I said, or everybody would have done it by now. So it's a little bit of different mechanism, and it's just amazing the things that they're doing. And if you go to their website, you can see all of the gadgets of the most obvious things that they're doing that are just phenomenal.
I love your passion, Sarah. Oh my goodness, we're gonna have to have you again, because I love how eloquent and weird.
We
this has just been awesome. I know, we only just started. We only have less than a minute. We have 30 seconds left. So,
oh, my goodness.
Sarah, in 30 seconds or less, can you give us any advice for young, starting out piccolo players? I mean, I think you were pretty eloquent in the beginning talking about this, but you have 15 seconds. Go.
Practice the piccolo as though it was a different instrument from flute. Do your flute practicing, then do your piccolo practicing.
Perfect.
Awesome. Sarah Jackson, LA Philharmonic, this has been fabulous. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. I could talk for another half hour.